can't recommend enough if you are ADHD to just use a coping tool that's going in the place you're already going, literally or metaphorically.
Handy.
Yeah. One of the other good coping mechanisms that I was given, and when I remember to do it, was to just get, like, shelves and hooks. Just get those, like, those little sticky hooks, those command hooks or whatever, and just put them everywhere. And let me tell you, having a bunch of things where I can just, like, idly hang my keys, or put my coat there, or put my wallet there, or whatever, so that they're, it's hanging up in some place where I can see it, has prevented me from losing things that I used to lose all the time by a dramatic margin.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I like putting things that I know is, like, part of the next task mm-hmm. somewhere that I'll see it again later. Usually, like, on the clothes hamper, because it's, like, between the bedroom and the rest of the house and the bathroom, or, like, on top of the dog food bin, because it's between most of the apartment and the kitchen and also the living room. So, mm-hmm. like, I'll end up just putting weird fucking bullshit there. And as I walk past, go, oh, right, there's a hammer on top of the dog food. So
right, yep. Experience. We are a podcast with a deeper look at the play experience and the finer details of running and writing games. And we are queer people speaking with authority about games. And yes, we swear, and you can die mad about it.
Yes, let your anger poison your body until you perish.
Flawless. Perfect. Thank you. I am Monica, your Polestar host. I am a game designer and developer for the Onyx Path. I've done a handful of other side projects as well. I am, surprise everyone, I'm working on a book. So I'm hopefully going to maybe be a published author soon enough. Like, novelist. I am already a published author, but, like, got that going for me too. And I am obviously not here by myself. I'm here with Harumi. Hello, Harumi. Please tell our lovely audience who you are and what you do.
I'm Harumi. I'm a lot of things. I guess most saliently, I am a tabletop role-playing game writer, designer, developer, cultural consultant, and player, and someone who fucking swears a lot about things that they don't like. I have a ridiculously large cultural background in general. My bio looks like somebody created Mary Sue or something. I don't know. It's
built on too many points.
I mean, I went to... So, before I get started, I'm going to say that I have pretty profound ADHD. And because I didn't sleep very well last night, I didn't take my meds today. So, it's going to get fun. For me, not necessarily for you.
Oh, no, it'll be fun for me, too. Don't worry.
Okay. Fun for us, but not necessarily the audience. So, like, Friday, I went to retirement, sort of like a get-together for one of the faculty members for both me and my spouse. We both have one of the same master's programs, but not at the same time. At any rate. Going around, like, and being like, oh, yeah, good to meet you. Like, this is what I've been up to. I'm like, okay, so, yeah, now that I have a master's degree and was teaching for a while, and that I'm no longer special operations in the Army, I've since written, or at least worked on, 100 books and games. And I'm like, I fucking sound made up.
Like... Someone posted about you on Tumblr, people would be like, that's not real. You made that up. That's fake. So you said you wanted to talk to me about accessibility, which is great because we opened this whole thing talking about modifying our lives around ADHD.
Yeah.
But accessibility, we know, is not just for mental roadblocks. It can be for physical ones, too.
Yeah.
actually, like, need to pull back a little bit and be like, what the hell are we talking about when it comes to accessibility? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, with accessibility, people were generally talking about, like, different ways in which people can get left behind by sort of catering to a more mainstream audience. So, like, usually we're talking about things like visual impairments, including blindness, hearing impairments, including deafness, partial deafness, hard of hearing. Sometimes audio processing is put into there, usually because it's a cognitive issue that's not diagnosed correctly, because fucking when when do disabled folks ever get treated correctly or fairly? Can also be talking about mobility issues. In tabletop roleplay, that's especially like hand and arm stability and dexterity. Like, for some folks, rolling dice isn't great, and lugging around all those fucking books that we all have, like, sometimes that's like just too much. We naturally have cognitive areas like fucking ADHD. Some of us don't make dopamine in the same way that other people do. And so, like, tasks don't necessarily get prioritized the same way that they would in other people's brains. Like, unless something's on fire, my brain doesn't care about it.
Yeah. Boy, what a mood. Yeah, I know how that goes. Don't give me homework in your game. We'll just use essences as an example, because I have lived in that monkey house for a very long time, and it comes up often because, you know, it's the big thing I worked on. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think is actually very good about the system is that there's a bunch of stuff that, like, that are milestones where, like, you basically come up with a goal for your character, and, like, you have to, it's a thing you kind of have to think about in advance, and then when you achieve it, you unlock some stuff. It's how you advance your character. And I, the person who came up with this idea, am the person who is like, oh, that's a task? I'm never going to do it. So, like, as much as I like that idea, I'm the culprit who's always like, did you come up with a personal milestone? And I'm like, absolutely not. That was a thing I had to think of outside of game time. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't be assigned homework. I got through regular school and college under duress. That's how that's how I made it here. And in fact, actually, speaking of that, in the companion book, we actually put in a new rule for the personal milestone thing that makes it not homework and makes it a thing that you talk about at the end of the session instead, which I didn't really think about as being an accessibility change, but it kind of is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one more area that I feel like LARPing does a way better job than tabletop roleplay does, and that's like social-emotional concerns.
Okay.
And the reason why LARPs are better at it is because they have no fucking choice about it. Like, if you're in a LARP and the system or the GMs or whatever are not doing a good job of accommodating folks, you have someone in real life lose their fucking shit. And, like, you can't, like, ignore that. Like, someone has, like, emotional bleed from their character and then just, like, physically rages out, and like, oh, well, no one feels safe, including the person raging out. We need to make rules about this. But it's something that is often left unaddressed in a tabletop, with the exception of safety rules. I think safety rules are about the only place where we kind of consider that.
There is really a remarkable lack of, like, hey, if this has got you heated, or, like, this is upsetting you for some reason, outside of, like, X-carding, what do you do? It's just not there. And you would think that tabletop would be, like, better about it, given that it is often an intimate group of people. Like, tabletop groups are usually, like, 3 to 6 people. And you would imagine it would be much easier for a small group of people, for one person to be like, hey, this is triggering me in some way, right? And I don't just mean the emotional PTSD thing, I also mean, like, some autistic triggers, like, it's making me physically, I'm feeling physically uncomfortable and I need to stand up and move, or, like, you know, something about this is overstimulating me. I don't know if you are a ADHD overstimulation sufferer, but it's not fun.
No.
No, and it really will take you out of enjoying a good session of tabletop roleplay. And sometimes it's like, my pants are itchy. And it's very hard to be, like, as a grown adult, my socks are bothering me. So I need to take 15 or to throw them across the room. Please excuse me. And everybody is like, what? Actually, yeah. if you have friends, they'd be like, okay, go take your socks off. Love you. Bye. Come back. But it still can be kind of embarrassing to ask for that sort of thing.
Yeah, especially when, like, there's a tendency for people to be like, oh, well, we're a group of friends who have been together forever, and so we know what everything someone else is going through, and, like, we know each other completely. And it's like, yes, that's not fucking true, because it's not actually possible.
Right.
Like, people don't know themselves. How the fuck do you, on the outside of that person's brain, think you're going to understand them? Like, yeah. You're going to have a really good idea of what's going on, but, like, anything can be fucking with somebody. And it's something that, like, as a society, we need to be better at, but also within games. Like, folks increasingly aren't great.
Yeah.
Or at least folks are increasingly known to be not great. Life's rough, and games shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's real. So let's segue from this, since we've talked about a lot of things that can be problems, to what kind of things can be solutions. Now, obviously, we are two people sitting in a digital recording studio noodling on things, so just we are never going to cover every possible solution. But let's just talk about some. What are some things that you can do to... This is also very much a design show, so we can talk about also thinking, bearing accessibility in mind when designing, and bearing in mind accessibility when you're sitting down at a table with friends. Let's talk about what can be done to help people enjoy our favorite hobby.
Yeah. So the first thing that I want to bring up is something that I've only recently started considering, mm-hmm. because A, it's a layout thing, and I don't do layout for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
And two, it's a visual impairment thing, and while I have pretty bad astigmatism, mm-hmm. with my glasses on, I'm still pretty functional, so I don't usually consider myself to have visual impairment, but, like, that's because society doesn't consider myopia to be a visual impairment, even though it absolutely fucking is.
Yeah, if you wear glasses, you regularly use an assistive device. Bear that in mind. I am also a glasses user. And in a similar position where if I don't have these on, it is unsafe for me to drive, mm-hmm. and, like, navigating around my apartment can be difficult. But also, if I just put them on, then I live my life normally. Which, like you said, society recognizes that level of visual impairment, mm-hmm. as normal. And I agree with you that more disabilities should just be treated like glasses wearers.
Yeah. It turns out that glasses are just canes for your eyes.
They sure are. They are, in fact, just canes for your eyes.
So the layout issue that I wanted to point at that specifically impairs folks who are either totally or near blind.
Mm-hmm.
You ever copy and paste text from a game PDF?
Yes, I have.
Has it always been, like, the section that you copied, has it always been, like, what you wanted it to copy?
Usually, but it does get funky.
So, like, you've seen issues where, like, you select, like, two paragraphs, and then for some weird layout reason, in between those two paragraphs, there's actually, like, another paragraph from a different column, because there's some hack that the layout guy was doing to be like, okay, I need to fit this text in here, so I'll just, like, add in another column or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I can't say that's happened to me recently, but I totally believe you.
In, like, designing games, like, thinking about how many words are going to go on to a given page, I'll frequently just, like, copy and paste a whole page from a PDF just to be like, okay, what kind of text density do we have here? And in the process of doing that, I've learned that there are tons of books where, like, the page looks like it's in two columns, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And what the text is actually doing is not that. And if you had a fucking screen reader, that shit would be incomprehensible.
Oh, God.
Which
yeah.
doesn't mean that folks using screen readers can't play the game or use that book. It means that they have to unfuck the layout. And that's not their job. They're just trying to play a fucking game. They're not trying to add layout, like, accessible layout design to their resume while they're playing a game. Like, it's not their job. They just want to fucking play a game.
Yeah, for real. You put a little label on this RPG, like, must Must have 5 years experience with Adobe InDesign in order to play. Also on a design note, one of the things that I have been bearing in mind more, where like I often have to think about usability, it's part of my day job and part of my other job. And one of the things that I've learned and then have like really kind of tried to stick with where as much as I can control it, is if you are going to color code something, to also include like a symbol.
Yes.
Or something else for your colorblind readers. Especially if you're going to do like blue, purple, or red, green.
Mm.
Very common colorblind colors. You can try to think outside the common colorblindness box, but that's a real big spectrum, so you are probably best off being like, it's the blue thing, but also the circle, because it's very easy to be like, circle and square are two different things. Now, I don't know how that affects people with low or no vision, and like a screen reader, but presumably also the thing you're labeling with the color or the symbol has a name that can be read. So, yeah.
Yeah, screen readers are really good with emojis.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like a dense block of them, it's probably going to be really fucking annoying. But like, if it's like, blue circle, tip, do this.
Right.
Blue circle, tip, do this. And it's like, okay, blue circle means, okay, sure, that's fine.
Yeah.
And other bits with usability that frequently cause fights within developer circles is like, what should be capitalized? What should be bolded? What should get italics? What should be set apart from the rest of the texts? And there's a lot of folks in sort of the tend to be like older guard where it's just like, well, novels, like fantasy novels don't have all that bullshit. Just write it like a fantasy novel. And I'm like, it's not a novel, though.
Not a novel.
Like, if you want the non-system stuff, the stuff that you can just sort of not necessarily ignore, but it's okay if you fuck up at the table. If you want to write that like a novel, that probably works fine. But if we were talking about system stuff where, like, the details matter, that shit has to be as accessible as possible. Like, people are going to be using that. And, like, if there are any numbers that have any meaning in gameplay, they need to be numerals.
I there was no video on this, but I just was very solemnly and lightly annoyedly nodding. So I am not, have you used a screen reader personally or like familiar? You seem to be familiar with how they work.
I'm fairly familiar with them. I don't use one, but like, I'm not friends with people who regularly use them. I do know people who use them, and my spouse works in special education and is working towards being like a district level support person for folks with visual impairments. So like, they've both taught themselves Braille over the last month or so. Well, no, it didn't. Really, it took them less than a month. Cool. But also, like, started inventing relatively cheap ways to teach students how to learn Braille and how to make both reading and writing in Braille cheaper. So, like, it's an increasing exploration into, like, what people are going through and how society as a whole is letting them down. But like, we can be better and fucking address that.
Yeah. My question, because I have no personal experience with this at all, and it is important to me to create things that are as accessible as I am allowed to make them and to learn these things so that if I'm doing things on my own time, I can do it better than the limits of the things that I have control over, right? When you work for hire, there's a limited amount of things you have control over. You can do your best to exert as much control as you can, but, you know, that's the job. So does things like bolding or italicizing or capitalizing system terms change the way a screen reader reads them? Do you know?
I don't actually know. I think it does, but, like, yeah, I don't know for certain.
Okay.
But, like, as long as the bolding is done in a sensible fashion, like, it shouldn't matter too much.
Okay.
But, like, if for some odd reason, it's like you have a whole line that's bolded, except it's just the words that are bolded and not the spaces in between. If a screen reader says bold, word, unbold, bold, word, unbold, then that'd get fucking infuriating.
Yeah, that would be really annoying.
And the only way as like developers we can do anything about that kind of issue
is by using the arcane ancient secrets of show direct formatting guides in Word, which no one fucking knows about, because why would you ever need that information? Unless, you know, you're fucking ADHD and want to make things really specific. I.e. me. But yeah, in the styles pane, like, you click the thing and, like, all the way at the bottom, there's the two checkboxes. There's show style guides, which lets you see which style each paragraph and whatnot actually is in, regardless of what it looks like. And then show direct formatting guide will put a box around any piece of text that is different from the style that it's in, which will let you know everything that's bold, everything that's like a slightly different font or text size. And like, I'm saying all this, Monica definitely knows, but listeners, you probably don't. But like, I'm not explaining this to Monica, I'm explaining it to you. And if all of you know, then I don't know what I'm doing here.
I don't know how much of our audience knows the ins and outs of Word, and I knew about half of that, actually, so you also were telling me.
Oh, okay.
But I do know how to pry open the lid of a Microsoft Word style and perform a few arcane gestures and then make it do what I want it to do. And I learned this from the senior technical writer I have to work with, who is a Word witch named Joanne, who will never listen to this episode, but I love you, Joanne.
Hooray for Word Witches.
Yes, hooray for Word Witchery. So, like, yeah, that was interesting to me, because if that does, in fact, change the way a screen reader reads something, then cool, we're doing something that's helpful. And if bolding a word doesn't actually change someone who's listening, basically listening to the book, then, like, maybe we should think about incorporating a symbol or something to call that out. Which, again, maybe be beyond the limits of what you and I can do when we're working for hire, but it's something we can think about doing on our own or implementing on something that's beginning from scratch. What are some other things that we could talk about that are, like, good accessibility stuff? Like, you know, there's obviously a PDF if books are too heavy. That's pretty straightforward. PDF and a tablet. That's a pretty easy solution. God bless modern technology, right?
Yeah.
Same with a dice roller. Like, Google has a dice roller now.
Yeah. I've been using that thing forever. I'm annoyed that it doesn't do successes, or at least it hasn't been doing successes for me.
I don't think it does, but I'm going to find out.
But, like, I can visually identify what hits a target number, so. But that is a thing that exists inside games that can be an accessibility issue, is dice pool systems, by their nature, are more flexible than other systems where you're just taking, like, a single skill and then adding that as a modifier. So if you're taking, like, a skill and an attribute and you're, like, going, okay, here we go, it's more flexible. It encompasses a wider variety of actions that you can do and ways of performing those actions. But it also means that anyone who has processing issues, anyone who has especially memory issues, like working memory, they have to keep more things in their fucking head, which can slow things down. There are ways to kind of work at it, but in general, it'll be slightly slower than a single modifier roll, just like from beginning to end. And thinking about that and being aware of it when we're designing things is going to be really useful. And this is this is such a high level fucking thing.
It's fine. So we're a high level show. So,
but so, like, a way to kind of gauge how challenging a system is going to be, like how challenging a mechanic is going to be for someone at a table, is to be really fucking pedantic when you're writing things down. And, like, every step, like, absolutely every step, even ones that you think are super easy. Because just because it's super easy doesn't mean it doesn't add up. So, for, like, as an example, if I'm saying roll an attack with a close combat plus cunning because you're being a sneaky little fuck. They need to identify the two key terms, cunning and close combat. They need to recognize that close combat is a skill and find their score
over in the skill section, they need to recognize that cunning is an attribute, and it's going to be in the attribute section. Add those two together, measure out that many dice, roll them, and either remember what the target number is because they're playing in a system where it's always the same, or you're playing in a fucking WAD game where target numbers change.
Yeah.
Figure out what the target number is, then basically perform pattern recognition on the dice to figure out, okay, which numbers are showing, which numbers do I care about? Okay, add those. Did I meet the difficulty? Also, what was the difficulty? Because I forgot the difficulty. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's a simple dice roll for, like, most people who've played systems that have those kinds of features. Like, it's something that we've done fucking hundreds, if not thousands of times, if not tens of thousands of times. Mm-hmm. But for someone new to the system, or for someone who has regularly had help and doesn't have the person who's been helping them recently, or maybe they've been struggling the whole fucking time. Like, there's a lot of small steps in that process, and when you're thinking about adding any changes, any complexity, you are messing with that flow. And I'm not saying that messing with that flow is bad, I'm saying that you should be aware of everything that you're asking of the player's head. Because we've all been in a fucking table where someone has been like, okay, and what I roll for this? And then the very next turn, they're doing the same thing. And they're like, okay, but what I roll for this? And it's not because they're not interested. It's not because they're not trying. It's because the procedure is not fitting into their brain right now. And we, both as designers and as GMs and as other players, we can do things to make that easier.
I do think that, like, crunchy maximalist games, which I like, to be clear, are a nightmare if you have, like, memory issues or, like, have struggled to retain information or things like that. And I am so pro cheat sheets and writing things down or finding whatever coping thing helps you not have to ask the same question over and over again, because people do understandably get annoyed, even if you're not doing it on purpose.
So, mathematical operations in games, there's kind of like a hierarchy to them as to like how much they fucking suck and how how much you should try to avoid using them.
Mm-hmm. They sure are.
Because like, addition, simple addition, adding two single-digit numbers together, most folks can do that without, like, a tremendous amount of difficulty. Mm-hmm. As they get more tired, as they get, like, more emotional because, like, there's more stuff going on in the game and they're more invested in things, the difficulty will wax and wane. But, like, it's usually not, like, a huge ask for adding two single-digit numbers by themselves every now and then. Mm-hmm. Subtraction, slightly harder. Multiplication, if we're talking about doubling, is not awful, but, like, tends to not be, like, something that people are super quick at.
Yeah.
Multiplying by any other number but two, now you're running into fucking issues.
My personal rule for this, because I 100% agree with you, and I had just sort of chalked these up as generally good design things. I had not really thought of them as accessibility things, but you are right that it's, like, your math should be basic addition. If you have to subtract, it should be a very small number, like minus two dice, right? Like, don't be tempted to go higher than three. Stop. What are you doing? And I personally prefer that to be either a penalty, like, if you're going to subtract, it should be, like, lose this modifier, right? Minus two. Or lose a certain number of dice, minus three dice, right? Like, then it's pretty straightforward. You're like, I'm putting this together, and then I'm taking this away. Very straightforward. If you're going to multiply, by two. If you're going to go any bigger than that, skip all the middle numbers, pretend they don't exist, and go straight to 10.
Yeah.
Yes. Don't. Numbers between, when it comes to multiplication, numbers between 2 and 10 do not exist. Multiply by 2 or multiply by 10. If you were okay with creating a game that's maybe a little bit inaccessible to some people, you can multiply by 5, but be careful. But watch out. I'm calling that one a yellow flag.
Yes.
Don't fuck around with times 3, times 4, times 6. Stop that. Fuck that. What are you doing? And if you're going to divide in half but also and nothing half. Else. Yeah. Don't. Yeah.
If you're going to divide, don't.
Don't.
But
unless it's in half. It's in half. Yeah.
In half.
and round up.
Mm-hmm.
The only exception to the rounding is if it's you as the GM and you're trying to make things skewed towards the player's favor, mm-hmm. and you are okay with doing the fucking math. If you're not okay with doing the math, then round up always, all the time.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about mathematical operations other than those four, fucking don't.
Stop. No.
Fucking
don't.
once
again.
I'm going to use a logarithmic set in my shut the fuck up.
I'm going to kick you in the shins if you say that to me.
I've seen games use fucking logarithms, and I'm like, I will kill you. I will use my brain to make your brain explode. Fucking no.
I think there's something to be said for designing things for a very niche and specific audience. And, like, using a logarithmic function in your math is a thing that is designed specifically for a unique and specific audience. But I think you have to be aware that you're doing that, and you have to be upfront, like, this is a game for math nerds. And I think it's okay to be like, this is a game for math nerds. If you're not, like, super into this high-level math, this is not the game for you. But I think you have to say that, and you have to own it.
Yeah.
And then you can't pretend like the average person knows how to do a logarithmic function. I strongly advise against doing that unless you fully understand that your game will then be appealing to an audience of like 10 people.
Yeah. Also, on the nature of math operators in game design, if you're gonna do math operations as part of a thing that people need to do sort of on the fly.
Oh god, yeah.
Don't mix them.
No.
And
don't.
Not just like explicitly in the system, also implicitly in the system. Like, if it's ever possible, like if you're making someone subtract, it should never, fucking never be possible to subtract a negative number. Because then you're mixing operations. You're making some people add and some people subtract using the same rule. And like, this is THACO. This is fucking THACO. This is why I went on a fucking deep dive to try to understand THACO, and I'm like, okay, I can track the internal logic for most of this, and it's not actually terrible. However, the specifics make it complete fucking trash. And the main thing is that it's like, okay, well, we've decided that 0 is going to be really hard to hit, and 10 is going to be really easy to hit in terms of AC. So just do this, and you know how if you hit or not. I'm like, okay, that's not bad. But our system goes to negative 10 AC, which is good. Okay, motherfucker. So high level's good. Low AC good. Low THACO good. I need you to pick a direction that these numbers are going.
One of the interesting things that I've seen to do the, what is it, descending AC, where like lower is better, is Kevin Crawford's blank without number system. He did change it for the most recent ones to be ascending AC because people liked that. But like Godbound and some of his earlier stuff used a function where to calculate your attack, you took your modifier plus their AC plus whatever you rolled. And then if that calculation added up to 20, you hit, which is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And that doesn't leave you like subtracting a negative number. So if someone's AC is 0, you have no modifier. And I think it went down to like maybe -1 or -2 if you had a bunch of particularly good effects, which then ultimately was then subtracting the AC by technically adding a negative number. And that's like a good bit easier than whatever the fuck original THACO was on about.
Yeah. Fucking people like praising Gygax, but the dude is a fucking hack.
Yeah. And racist.
Mark it. You could leave that in. Fucking Gygax was a fucking hack. His system design. Okay, so I've been playing D&D since before the fucking Redbox. I've been playing D&D since before THACO.
Okay.
First edition D&D. D&D, not AD&D. First edition D&D did not fucking have THACO. It had tables because whatever internal reasoning Gygax had was so fucking complicated, you needed to have a lookup table. You're like, okay, so I'm a fighter, so I'm going to look in the fighter table. Or if I'm an elf. I'm going to look in the elf table because elves were a hack of the class system because he didn't consider what if someone wants to play as a dwarf or an elf or anything. Just again, hack. and then find the table for elves. Okay, well, I'm a sixth level elf, which is a fucking bizarre sentence to say. All right, that's the opponent's AC. So I look down the elf, the fifth level elf column, across from the enemy has negative one AC row. And if I roll that number that I find, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I started playing this game at like fucking five, and even I know this is terrible. And then they made it dumber by adding in negative AC and using Thaco as a way to kind of like figure that out. And the thing is that like, if all of the math had been going in the same direction, it would have been fine. But like, if someone's looking at a number and they have to decide which math operation to do based on the number and not on the rule, you have fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so I need to do the ending credits, but thank you so much for this discussion. All right, BXP is brought to you by the Misdirected Mark Network. Thank you. Become a BXP patron. Patrons get an extended cut of every episode, episodes early, and a special place to hang out on our Discord. And you can support us for as little as $1 a month. And if you'd rather support Bonus Experience without Patreon, you can subscribe on Ko-fi instead. That's ko-fi.com/bonusexp, or buy our stuff. You can go to bxpcast.com/bxpswag and check out our merch page. We have a bunch of cool stuff you can buy there. But don't forget that BXP is sponsored by Nerdy Kepi, where you can get all kinds of rad queer swag, including the Exalted Essence Kickstarter bags, which were funded by the Kickstarter. They are not Kickstarter exclusive. If you didn't buy one, you can still get this really, really cool bag. They've got a bunch of awesome hand-picked art from the book, or your choice of the logo, and they hold 4 Exalted Splat books, or like 20 regular RPG books. It's also got a lot of cool internal pockets, and there's a video of me like putting things in it, and you can check that out there. Remember to use code BXPCAST to check out for 10% off, and that never expires, so if you want to collect all 6 Exalted bags, you can just keep going back and using it. They also have like cool shoes and joggers and button-down shirts. I own several loud button-down shirts in a variety of pride flags that I wear to meetings. I'm waiting for someone to figure out that I'm letting my pride flag fly there. Remember that saying nice things is always free. Leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google, wherever, and help us get more listeners. And if you like Bonus Experience, you will also like Misdirected Mark Plays. Phil, Chris, Bob, and Jerry play and discuss a campaign they've created and are playing. Now, instead of just hearing them talk about the theory of gaming and game mastering of the games they're playing, you can actually hear what they do at the table. It's come full circle in their exploratory play series, MM Plays. And if you want to hear more of the show, you can find it at bxpcast.com. Part of the Misdirected Mark Network. I was wondering if you were going to do that twice. If you'd like to answer the questions that we had about screen readers because you use one yourself, or you'd like to weigh in on the conversation about accessibility, you can shoot us an email at bonusexpcast@gmail.com or drop us an ask at bonusexperience on Tumblr. Or if you just want to chat with us, you can contact us directly by joining our Discord, tinyurl.com/bxpdiscord. If you want to hear more of me, I'm a sometimes guest on the Eternal Mooncast talking about my other special interest, Sailor Moon, which can be found at eternalmooncast.com, as well as the Systematic Understanding of Everything, a complete Exalted explainer that's 30-some-odd episodes and will teach you everything about it from its rules to its setting at exaltcast.com. You can also find me, I'm Dice-Wizard, on Tumblr. You can follow me there. I have shunned every other social media platform since then, so that's it. If you want to find me, it's right there. Hiromi, where can they find you?
You can find me at hidomikoda.com or hidomikoda on most social media platforms, although really Tumblr is the way to go. Like, I still have accounts on other platforms, but like...
Yeah, same. I'm just not using them. They exist. I'm just not using them. Sweet. All right. Well, everybody get out. Don't forget, change it if you want to.
Do I have to do this? Ugh, fine. Bonus Experience is written by Monica and edited by Margaret. Our logo and art is by Nino Studios. Find her on Facebook and Instagram. Our theme song is Reuse Noise with the Light by CDK and is used under the Attribution Non-Commercial Creative Commons license. BXP is part of the Misdirected Mark Network. Okay, there, I read it. Now, bye!